This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 8th of July 2022. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 7th of July 2022. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are Station Approach Set to Be Revived, Hat Fair Returns to the City Centre, and Pressure on Southern Water Over Sewage Spill. So we start with the first story.
Yes, the station approach set to be revived. Winchester Civic Chiefs are relaunching the multi-million redevelopment of the station approach area. Previous attempts, including a large office block on the corner of Station Road and Gladstone Road, were scuppered by councillor revolt, legal challenge, and then the COVID pandemic. The area covers land near the railway station from Station Road to Sussex Street and between Station Hill and Gladstone Street, known as the Carfax site. It also includes part of Andover Road and the triangle of land known as the Cattle Market Car Park between Worthy Lane and Andover Road. Now the City Council is having another go at development and is involving Network Rail, which owns land in the area, including car parks. The potential development area also includes the Territorial Army base in Newburgh Street. Council leader Martin Todd said, "We're restarting the station approach project because there are still real opportunities to improve things in that area. But we're not carrying on as we were. COVID has happened, work and travel patterns have changed. The movement strategy is changing how people get around the city, including in the station area. And this time, we're talking to Network Rail and other partners to see if it's possible to create a coherent scheme that uses both railway and city council land. If we get this right, it's a great opportunity. It will help us strengthen green travel and connect the station, city, and the wider area better. It can support future ways of working and living in our city, and it can do so in a way that respects the city and all the things that are special about it." In a statement released yesterday, the council said, "For more than a decade, the council have wanted to make more of the station approach area. And while there's been disagreement about previous plans that have come forward, there's been no disagreement that there is an opportunity to make real improvements versus how things are today. There's also been a desire to take a wider view than only the council's landholdings. It's impossible to produce a joined-up plan for the station area without Network Rail's involvement. This is why, when approached by Network Rail and LCR, we agreed to explore the possibility of working together to understand potential options for regeneration and whether a viable, local and community-driven vision can be developed on the respective sites surrounding the railway station. At this stage, no decisions have been made regarding future partnerships and all parties are exploring the options. One lesson learned from the past is that it will be vital to work closely with local residents, businesses and stakeholders, and we have agreed that this will be at the heart of our approach going forward. Before any plans are drawn up or proposals put forward, the Council will shortly be bringing forward a consultation and engagement programme as the first step in the project, and also laying out how it expects the rest of the plan to develop over time. The Council is looking at market value, transport and parking to inform its ideas. A master plan is due in 2023, a full business case in 2024, and a planning application is in 2025. A report on station approach will go to the Council's Scrutiny Committee on Wednesday, July the 13th. The Council Cabinet will consider the report on Tuesday, July the 19th. The previous schemes were criticised for overdevelopment with large numbers of parking spaces. A revolt of Tory councillors in 2016 scuppered the first scheme, and the second one, estimated at £150 million, was given planning permission in 2019, but withdrawn the plans after a legal challenge in the High Court by the City of Winchester.
And the next headline story is Hat Fair returns to the city centre. Thousands lined the streets of Winchester as Hat Fair returned to the city with a burst of colour, dance and music. The 47th annual show was officially opened with a huge carnival which poured down the high street at midday on Friday. A mix of performers, volunteers and local schools were cheered on as they made their way around the cathedral before eventually finishing in Abbey Gardens. Andrew Loretto, director of Hat Fair, said a few words as crowds gathered to mark the full return of the UK's longest-running festival of outdoor arts since 2019. Speaking to the Chronicle, he said, "The carnival was epic. It was a joy to bring the parade back into the city and celebrate all these young people's creativity and imagination. It's a celebration of bringing everyone together. And for me, Hat Fair is about joy, humanity, inclusivity and mixing all those different voices." This year's Hat Fair saw performers return to the city centre for the first time since before the pandemic. And this article is accompanied by a number of photographs which show all the people taking part with the most amazing costumes, really, really bright headdresses, hundreds and hundreds of children, and of course the streets so jammed it seems almost impossible to walk through. And there's a lovely picture which I like of some young drummers who've got these drums on straps dangling in front of their stomachs and banging away like billy-o.
The final headline story is pressure on Southern Water over sewage spill. Civic chiefs are piling the pressure on Southern Water after raw sewage was strewn across Winchester High Street. The utility company has been accused of putting profit over people as heavy downpours caused yet another overflow on Monday, months after significant investment in the network was promised. Shoppers were left retching after having to sidestep human waste near the Buttercross as the rainfall began. One woman described the dreadful smell as the drains bubbled up, spewing the contaminated water onto the street. Hampshire County Councillor and Liberal Democrat member for Winchester Eastgate, Dominic Hiscock, previously raised the recurring issue at a full council meeting in November. He has since said it is yet to see any evidence of improvement work having taken place. "It's getting silly now," he said. "Every time it rains hard, we are getting sewage running down our streets. It's nonsense. It shouldn't be happening." Once a water company starts putting shareholders' profits over the customers' needs, then that company hasn't got much of a life left. I think that seems to be about where we're at. There appears to be an inability to stop pumping sewage into our rivers and the Solent, yet they can still afford to pay huge dividends out to shareholders. Councillor Hiscock said he had discussed ways with City Council leader Martin Todd in which they could break the flow of rainwater running down from Romsey Road and into the High Street in a bid to relieve the pressure from the problem drains. However, he has said the council can only do so much to fix the problem. It's their job, Southern Water. Nobody else has that responsibility to stop the sewage from flowing down the river, he said. All the stuff that comes out of the drains and onto the High Street ends up down the bottom floating through the weirs. It is unacceptable. A City Council-led clean-up operation was swiftly put in place to deal with the latest incident. A Southern Water engineer was sent out to assess the situation, but the authority has since said it is pushing the company for further action. A spokesperson said, "Our environmental health team responded quickly to the overflowing Southern Water foul sewer and ensured the area was made safe and cleaned up without delay. We are investigating the problem and pressing Southern Water for urgent action." Southern Water were contacted for comment, but have yet to respond.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Browning. Donald, known as Don Browning, formerly of Tegdown but at his home in Cardiff, on the 26th of June, aged 98. Bryant. Philip David, known as Phil Bryant, at home on 29th of June, aged 76. Chipperfield, Captain Brian Victor Chipperfield, at Winchester Hospice on the 17th of June, aged 77. Dreeper, Annabel Jane, known as Anna Dreeper, at home on the 3rd of July, aged 78. Dyke, Frances Emily Dyke, née Wright, on the 22nd of June, aged 100. Robothan, Marjorie Robothan, on the 29th of June, aged 101. Rutter, Marjorie Rutter, née Haygarth, on the 9th of June, aged 86. Sleet, Grace Margarita Sleet, on the 15th of June, aged 80. Spreadbury, John Spreadbury, at home on the 18th of June. Wickham, Sally Patricia, known as Sally Wickham, previously Matthews, nay Bunny, at home on the 20th of June, aged 89. Rose, Sylvia Elizabeth Rose, nay Clark. There are no dates given, but the funeral has already taken place. Spinner, Thelma Violet Spinner, nay Cowdrey, at Frimley Park Hospital on the 23rd of June. Wilson, Douglas George Wilson, at home on the 22nd of June, aged 76. And now we have Christian comment.
Listen to his creation, and it's by Liz Tatum. Yesterday, we went to the first day of the Hampton Court Flower Show, or Garden Festival, as it's now called. Everything and everyone was fresh and new, not jaded by a week under the sun and close scrutiny. Two things struck me. Firstly, the colours were bright and beautiful, both in the plants and flowers and in the people. The vibrancy of plant life was all around to see, and so were the colours of the people's clothing coming out in force to reflect nature's glory. The second thing that was obvious was the emphasis on being natural and allowing nature to do its thing. Many of the show gardens were full of wildflowers, or not so wild in a natural setting. We walked through a small woodland planted for a week to encourage us to forest bathe and relax our bodies and minds. We heard the sound of gurgling water in many spaces, and we thankfully sat and rested for an hour listening to a convincing talk on no-dig strategies for gardening and an increasing yield. Not for the first time in my life, I marvelled at God's creation, how clever and beautiful it all is, how everything is interconnected both in and on the planet. I can vouch for a peaceful and calming walk in the towering trees of Mitchell-Diver Wood or the newly planted meadow walk where I live. So it isn't just that everything we see lives by a symbiosis that is disrupted when we disturb it, but we are part of that system and are dependent on its good functioning and its beautiful and its, sorry, beneficial effect on us. Jesus understood nature and all he saw around him. He used the signs and seasons of nature in his parables as he taught people. He who has ears, let him hear, Matthew 11, referring to the ears of wheat. He talked of gathering in the harvests, working on the land, and even cursed a fig tree for not giving him fruit when it wasn't the season for fruiting, Mark 11:12. Bible commentators are not sure why he condemned the poor tree to wither and die, but perhaps it tells us something of how we will do likewise if we do not listen to his creation and look after it well. Here in the affluent northern hemisphere, we can turn our minds away from the threat of drought or flood. But look at our brothers and sisters in poor countries who suffer from the effects of our actions. Even Sydney is suffering, and those inhabitants are not so far removed from us in terms of wealth and lifestyle. We should beware. We abuse creation at our peril, and there is much we can do to redeem the current trends. How we live and what we buy, we can make an effort to renew our lifestyles and choices. I hope the garden festivals continue to reflect God's garden that he has given us to live in and to cherish for many years to come. Remember, though, the gifts in that creation come with responsibility. And that was by Liz Tatham.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Emailing letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters at hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Only six letters this week, and we'll start with the first,
which is from Terence. I do beg your pardon, which is from Terence Butler, and it's entitled Vibrant Emmaus. I was impressed with Gillian Knight's, Winchester City Council's, considered response to the concern expressed by Beacon following the necessary cuts in the County Council and City's budgets, chronicled June the 30th. Whilst the Beacon and its night shelter now provide both invaluable emergency and ongoing support and have achieved a remarkably high profile, there are many other lesser known voluntary and social enterprise organisations also providing services to homeless people, not least Emmaus Hampshire, which supports people to work their way out of homelessness, providing meaningful work, training, emotional development and a stable home for as long as they may need it. They are highly successful in achieving full independent living for many individuals. Whilst part of a long-standing international organisation, Emmaus relies heavily on local financial donations, often in support of specific projects. For example, its Winchester branch, cited by the Winchester Household Waste and Recycling Centre at Bar End, has just increased its available accommodation and work opportunities to around 30 places. There are also vibrant Emmaus branches in Eastleigh and Southampton. All three welcome interested visitors with or without household or financial donations. Or your readers might just like to Google Emmaus, that's E-M-M-A-U-S, for more details. As a former director of social services for the County Council, I have always been incredibly impressed by the goodwill and generosity of Hampshire residents. In the ongoing economic crisis, it is essential that a strategic, collaborative approach is maintained by the local authorities and independent sectors to ensure that the reduced funds are wisely allocated. And that letter is from Terence Butler, Lansdowne Avenue, Winchester.
The next letter is entitled New Approach to the Homeless. Ian Tate makes a very valid point in highlighting that making one part of our city more hostile for the homeless simply moves the problem elsewhere. That's from the Chronicle, June 23rd. It is the usual approach to attacking a symptom rather than the underlying cause. The Finns have completely solved homelessness by turning usual perceptions on their head. The scheme, introduced in 2007, is called Housing First. It is built on the principle that having a permanent home can make solving health and social problems much easier. The homeless are given permanent housing on a normal lease. That can range from a self-contained apartment to a housing block with round-the-clock support. Tenants pay rent, are entitled to receive housing benefits. Depending on their income, they may contribute to the cost of the support services they receive. The rest is covered by local government. Since the scheme started, thousands have benefited, and you will see no pathetic sleeping bags in the shop doorways of Helsinki. Of course, I am aware that Winchester, like local authorities across the country, is increasingly starved of central government funds and also deprived of means for raising revenue locally. However, with central Winchester regeneration, could not some of the Section 106 money go towards providing a real solution to homelessness, following the Finnish example? And that letter's from Kate McIntosh, West End Terrace in Winchester.
Unwelcoming is the heading of this letter from Alice Blakeway. Today, in Winchester's Abbey Gardens, I noticed the following. The public lavatory for the disabled has been closed for weeks, if not months, due to health and safety, as the notice on the lavatory door states. Surely health and safety require that disabled people should have access to a lavatory. The lavatory for the disabled in the ladies' lavatories has a defective lock. The bar is bent and cannot be shot across the door. The basin for the disabled has also been out of order for weeks, if not months. There is a large and apparently full black bag in the basin with a notice stating that the basin is out of order. Why should disabled people have to put up with this? The able-bodied at least have a choice, but no effort appears to have been made to repair the facilities promptly so that disabled people have equal access to a necessity of life. I'm surprised that Councillor Brian Lanning, chairperson of the Health and Environment Policy Committee, and Councillors Chris Edwards, Charles Radcliffe and Mark Reach of St Michael's Ward have put up with the situation for so long. A lot of tourists use these lavatories. not a great welcome to Winchester. And this is from Alice Brakeway, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
Gareth Davis, in this letter, writes about towering waste. I read the Hampshire Chronicle article on long-term empty private homes with a mixture of incredulity and disgust. It is clearly an egregious waste to see so many empty homes that could be put to use in helping with the housing crisis. The article mentions the City Council's housing team under Kevin Reid and its powers of enforcement. The hypocrisy of the council in this regard is staggering. I own property adjacent to the City Council-owned property at 16 Tower Street, Winchester, which has been empty and boarded up for 4 years, only to be sold within the last couple of weeks. The terrible waste of erecting scaffolding on three occasions when no work was carried out and employing surveyors and architects to no useful end beggars belief. I would appreciate your response to empty housing owned by the council, especially in relation to the council's own enforcement policy. That letter is from Gareth Davis, Colebrook Street, Winchester.
This next letter from Margaret Grant is entitled Looking After the Jubilee Wall. Just a little change from my other letters about pastimes and memories. This is one sight I thought I never would have had to put pen to paper about. Walking into the town via Andover Road, one of the main routes, I might add, I came upon a very sad and sorry sight. The little Jubilee walls built of bricks designed by local children in 1977-8 were surrounded by weeds, litter and a pile of overgrown twigs and branches that may be ready for the donors' bonfire night. I'm not sure who this area belongs to, but surely the owner or agent who looks to let the long empty premises behind would benefit from it being tidied up. What sort of sales team is it that has not thought of this one out? Also, what a vote catcher it could be for the local councillor to follow this responsibility and check through. The local children who left this legacy will now have children of their own. What message does this give them about how we look after Mum and Dad's city? Because this is what it is. And that's from Margaret Grant, nay Ailing, from Berriton Road in Hairstock.
And this letter is headed Swift Boxes, and it's from Bob Goss. Interested to read your item on swift nesting boxes, I have just made three and will be mounting them under the northwest-facing eaves of our house in central Romsey. However, in the article, April 22nd notice, you did not mention swift bricks. I came across them when checking out how to make the nesting boxes for swifts. Had we known about these 2 years ago, we would have incorporated them into our northwest-facing extension. However, I am interested to know people's views on such bricks. And this is from Bob Goss, The Harridge, Romsey.
That concludes the letters. We next have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment. That will then be followed by a letter from Westminster from Flick Drummond. And then the first person item is by a lady called Kimberly Barber, who is actually the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. So we'll start off with the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment.
Yes, and here it is. A new attempt on station approach is the headline. Here we go again. The City Council is having a third go at redeveloping the station approach area. The previous two attempts have been derailed by opposition, including a High Court legal challenge. With hindsight, that was a blessing, as the city would now be lumbered with a huge office block that would almost certainly be a white elephant in these post-COVID times. The City Council is this summer starting a public consultation to get feedback on what the public would like to see in this huge area which stretches from Newborough Street to the Cattle Market car park. Civic chiefs really must get this one right. As with the glacial progress on Silver Hill, the council is teetering on getting a reputation for failing to deliver major schemes. Only the £40 million new sports centre at Bar End has been completed. One major criticism of previous station approach schemes was that they were too commercially driven. We hope any new scheme will be on a human scale and something of which the city can be proud.
This week's letter from Westminster comes from Flick Drummond, who is the Member of Parliament for Meon Valley. Flick writes, "My team and I are dealing with several cases around the issuing of passports. COVID has led to a backlog of expired passports, and now foreign travel has opened up again. Huge numbers of people have applied to renew the document who didn't during the pandemic. It is one of those COVID issues that needs to be worked through. Around 900 additional staff have been recruited and the backlog is easing, but there are still problems. I do understand the frustration for those waiting on passports this year. However, the scale of the problem is this. On an average year, the passport office issues around 7 million passports. During the pandemic, 5 million expired. During the pandemic, many children were born who now require passports. In March of this year, 1 million passports were issued, so the backlog is being effectively tackled, but as you can see, big numbers are needed to get on top of it. Since April 2021, applicants have been asked to allow at least 10 weeks for their passport to arrive. It is important to note that some applicants are under the wrong impression that once their application is submitted, whether in paper form or online, the 10 weeks commences. This is not the case. The 10-week timeline commences when all supporting documentation is provided, such as an expiring passport or full birth certificate. If the passport office needs to ask you to send documents, your timeline will not start until those documents are received. Due to the demand, the passport office is prioritising passports for those who need to travel on compassionate or urgent medical grounds. I'm afraid booking travel does not guarantee passports will be issued. In short, please be patient, get all your documents ready and send and apply in good time. I caught COVID last week and it left me very tired and rather debilitated. I had to cancel events I was looking forward to, both at Westminster, I could not attend Parliament, and in Meon Valley. I only managed to attend my water forum on Friday, and that finished me off for the day and I had to go home. I am on the mend, but it is a lesson to us all that COVID has not gone away and infections are rising. I've had constituents up to visit Westminster over the last few weeks. I'm really pleased that the end of the pandemic has again allowed local people the chance to come and see where and how our democracy functions. If you would like to come to Westminster and you are a constituent, please do get in touch and we can arrange a visit. Parliament enters summer recess later this month and I know people are looking forward to the summer holidays. I will be taking some time off for a staycation, but I will also be out and about across Meon Valley too at various summer events. I will hope I will get to see you at some of them. Allegations about MPs' behaviour have continued over the last few days. I do not intend to comment other than to say this. We need more women in Parliament. Only 34% of women are MPs. I do a great deal to encourage women to enter public life. I will be redoubling those efforts. And that's from Flick Drummond, the Member of Parliament for Meon Valley.
Honour for the Chronicle by Kimberly Barber. A late night text popped through on my mobile. Would you like to come to the strategy days? This real-world, modern-day alternative to the fairy godmother was offering me a place at NewsQuest's annual conference, normally only reserved for the top management, with a few special guests thrown into the mix. The event is 2 days of presentations and brainstorming at a top hotel, with a fancy dinner on the night. It's where the company forms its strategy for the year, but it's also where it presents the NewsQuest Excellence Awards. I'd been spun a yarn about COVID striking several senior managers and places becoming free at the last minute. Whatever or however I'd got a place, it didn't matter. Cinders was off to the ball. Striking a blow for female weekly newspaper editors everywhere, there was no way I'd pass up this opportunity. I took over as regional editor at the 4 NewsQuest weekly titles in Hampshire, including the Hampshire Chronicle, at the end of last year. So being a relatively new editor, the strategy day was a great insight into the top workings of the company. After more than a decade of working in the lower ranks of local journalism, it was certainly very interesting to see things from the other side. It was a great chance to get a few points about how the industry currently is, which I am only too aware of after having first-hand experience at the coalface, and to put over some of the issues both readers and staff have raised with me in my first months of editorship. Anyway, after a day of listening and participating in strategy talk, which I definitely won't bore you with here, we had the dinner and awards. It was a pleasure to hear about some of the great work going on in our company. I doff my cap to Editor of the Year, Stephanie Priest of Midland South, and also to Journalist of the Year, Tom Seward from Swindon. Also Sophie Perry from the Oxford Newsroom, whose wonderful work setting up the industry's first LGBTQ+ network won her the Inclusion and Diversity Award. Not expecting anything, and just grateful of the last-minute invite and free glass of wine, I nearly fell off my chair when it was announced that Hampshire Chronicle was runner-up in the News Brand of the Year. We were just pipped to the post by the East Lothian Courier, but to receive such high praise about my title was brilliant to hear. NewsQuest's chief executive, Henry Foray Walker, praised the newspaper for a number of reasons: its growing digital presence, its community work, and its excellent print product. These were just a few examples of what makes it a strong local news brand. He said he'd been impressed with the way the brand was grown in this year. Of course, our newspaper is only ever as good as its staff and readers, and I am lucky to have a great team who are all dedicated and excited by local news. As a side note, we welcomed new reporter Sophie Gibbons to the team on Monday. She's a journalism graduate from the University of Portsmouth and is eager to get stuck in. I am also lucky to have such loyal and wonderful readers. We read all your comments and we love printing your letters. And everyone enjoys talking to you about issues that are affecting the community. Thank you for being so supportive. Later this year, the Hampshire Chronicle will be celebrating its 250th anniversary. We've some great celebration plans in the making, and I hope you will join us on marking this momentous year. Yes, the industry has changed a vast amount in 250 years, but fundamentally what we do has stayed the same. We are here at the heart of the community.
Right, now to the week's announcements. There are a few What's On items. On This coming week, so that's from the 11th of July through to the 16th of July, Perrin School Theatre is presenting The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And there will be an article about this when we get onto the general news item, so that's worth looking out. So that's Perrin School in Alresford presenting The Hunchback of Notre Dame at 7 p.m. From the 11th through to the 16th of July. Next weekend, that's from the 15th of July, which is the Friday through to the 17th of July, the Foodies Festival is at Winchester, which will be in the North Walls Recreation Ground. And then on next Saturday, that's the 16th, there will be Songs for a Summer Evening at 6:15 in St Bartholomew's Church in Hyde. A concert of songs you know and love by Vaughan Williams, Gershwin, Petunia and others. So that's next Saturday, 16th at 6:15 at St Bartholomew's. Also starting on the next Saturday, the 16th, and running through till the 23rd of July, the Chessel Theatre is presenting The Government Inspector. From Ukraine's most famous playwright, Nikolai Gogol, the Winchester Dramatic Society will perform the comedic storyline which mocks the corruption and incompetence of small town government. The show centres around the corrupt officials of a small Russian town thrown into panic at the news that an incognito government official is arriving to carry out the inspection. The director, Marcus Whitfield, said, although 200 years old, this play delivers a well-timed poke in the ribs that is right up to date. It's joyous and pacey, and an evening of fun is guaranteed. I obviously haven't seen this production, but I can recommend it. It is a great play, and well done. It is very, very funny. Mm. So that's at the Chessel Theatre from the 16th through to the 23rd. Sunrise today was at 5 o'clock in the morning, and the sun certainly was up at 5 o'clock this morning. Sunset this evening will be at 20 past 9 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with this recording, please telephone Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. That's Mary Davis on 01962 711 998. Not the contact number that is on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now move on to items of general news interest.
And the first one is entitled Perrin's School in Alresford to Perform Hunchback. Perrin School in Alresford will stage a production of the musical The Hunchback of Notre Dame from Monday, July the 11th to Saturday, July the 16th. After 2 years without productions, the secondary school has cast more than 160 students to perform in the sports hall with set design and acoustics by WLX Productions. With workshops delivered by professional practitioners throughout rehearsals, the school has taken seriously their philosophy of providing students with the West End experience. Maralitsa Alexiou, Director of Creative Arts at Perrin, said, "At Perrin's, we understand the importance of nurturing the arts. We always have. We believe that now even more so, that the arts in schools make our children more resilient, confident and able to express themselves positively in this modern world. The school's productions have long been known for high standards. After their 2019 performance of West Side Story, Winchester Today said, this wasn't a school performance, this was a professional, slick, romantic and gritty show. The last 4 minutes contained some of the most intense drama I have ever seen." John Geedall from Musicals for Kids said, "Congratulations to all involved. In over 40 years' involvement with school and youth theatre productions, I have never seen such an ambitious musical production in a school. A community orchestra and choir have been created for the show with huge support from local people."
This next item has rather been overtaken by events, but You'll see what I mean when we get through it. MP's fresh letter. Steve Bryan MP has resubmitted his letter of no confidence in Boris Johnson as the Prime Minister's position remains perilous. Former Winchester College pupil Rishi Sunak and Sajid Javid sparked a string of departures on Tuesday evening with their shock announcements. Both delivered broadsides at Mr. Johnson as they resigned from their cabinet posts. In light of the considerable fallout, Mr. Bryan, Conservative MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, has since renewed his calls for a change of leadership at the head of the party. He said, "Clearly it is not news to anyone that I do not wish the Prime Minister to continue in his post, but for the avoidance of any doubt, I have resubmitted my letter of no confidence to Sir Graham Brady this morning as chair of the 1922 Backbenchers Committee. We now have, and it's growing by the hour, some powerful new voices on the backbenches alongside us, urging the Parliamentary Party to turn the page. Meanwhile, my staff and I continue to do our job, working hard for Winchester and Chandler's Ford." Liberal Democrat candidate for Winchester and Chandler's Ford, Danny Chambers, said, "After all these years, Boris Johnson's lies and corruption can no longer be sustained. Government ministers who have been propping him up all this time are now resigning. They are jumping ship as they know the game is up. We're in the middle of a cost of living crisis and we have a total absence of leadership in this country. Time to change. Britain deserves better than this rotten Conservative government."
Winchester charity Caris Kids awarded £1,000. Five charities based in Hampshire have each received a £1,000 donation from the Movement for Good Awards. The awards, launched by Benefact Group, saw thousands of people across the UK nominated for a cause close to their hearts to be in with a chance of winning a share of the £1 million. Dreams Come True charity, Forgotten Veterans UK, First Chandler's Ford Scout Group, Invest in ME Research and Caris Kids will all benefit from the money following the significant public support in Hampshire. Caris Kids, which is based in Winchester, helps to get kids out of poverty in the slums of Kampala, Uganda. William Law from the charity said, "Winning this award is a joy to us. We're a small charity doing important work without the resources of a large organisation. It's an honour for our charity to win, but the real difference is always felt most by the kids in Uganda. We're committed to helping them win. 100% of the money donated goes to the cause, getting families out of poverty. That's quite rare for most charities. Our 100% model helps show our supporter their money is where it matters. The charity plan to use the money to buy gravity water filters for 69 of their Link families. These will remove dirt, bacteria and certain contaminants in the water, helping to provide reliably clean water for the families. This is the fourth year the Benefact Group has donated £1 million through the Movement for Good Awards. The independent specialist financial service aims to give all its available profits to charity."
Roll of registrars celebrated before wedding season. Two alpacas acted as ring bearers at a marriage ceremony held at a Hampshire registry office. The creatures were part of a ceremony assisted by Sonia Roberts and Helen Taylor, who work as registrars for Hampshire County Council. There's a picture here of them, and it says that the picture was released as part of a celebration of the essential role that registrars play on National Registrars Day, which took place on Friday, July the 1st, 185 years after the creation of the Civil Registration Service. Councillor Russell Oppenheimer, Hampshire County Council's executive member for recreation, said, "Whether it's officiating at a wedding or civil partnership, registering a new birth, or supporting families as they register the death of a loved one, Hampshire's registrars provide an essential role to all of us at some time in our lives. Whatever the situation, the care, compassion and professionalism of our registrars deserves to be appreciated. In Hampshire, in a normal year, the council's registration service register annually around 6,000 births, 9,000 deaths, 10,500 notices of marriage and civil partnerships, and 100 group citizenship ceremonies. The service also supports the local hospitality industry by delivering, on average, 5,500 personalised weddings and civil partnerships at nearly 150 approved venues, alongside other ceremonies such as renewal of vows or welcoming ceremonies. The service is available 365 days a year and operates from 15 bases across the county. Over the past 2 years, registration services across the UK have experienced unprecedented demand due to the challenges of COVID-19. Following the lifting of all restrictions, this year looks set to be a bumper year of weddings and civil partnerships. Councillor Oppenheimer said, "There are dozens of amazing places in Hampshire that are licensed for marriage ceremonies, and our registration team always go the extra mile to deliver the perfect day. It's fantastic that in 2022 we are on course to see the highest number of couples tying the knot in a decade, which is great news for so many people who've had their special plans postponed due to COVID-19. And the photograph that the article referred to at the beginning is here, and these two adorable creatures, that's the alpacas, are, shouldn't have said that, should I, are standing with the two ring bearers at a marriage earlier in the week.
This story is entitled "Reprieve for Two Shops Under Threat." Two Winchester shops battling eviction from King's Walk have been handed a huge boost in way of a 12-month extension on their tenancies. In what represents a climb down by the council, Civic Chiefs personally delivered a letter to both Sunflower Emporium and Suki Market to inform them of the stay of execution. The businesses were previously told they had until mid-May to clear out amid the council's long-term plan to revamp King's Walk and transform it into an arts and creative hub. However, in a host of emails obtained by Barbara Cooper and Alistair Day of Sunflower Emporium following a Freedom of Information request, it was revealed councillors were discussing possible pop-up options after struggling to fill the units. While the authority has insisted it is still pressing ahead with its vision for a vibrant new area, council chiefs have said they have listened to the feedback from the owners of both shops and granted their wish to stay. Hai Dong Su, the owner of Suki Market, said, "We are really happy. It is a huge relief. All this time we've been trying to keep going, keep trading, while also putting pressure on the council to let us stay. Now we can relax a little bit instead of always thinking about what is going to happen next. It's a big weight off our minds. Thank you to everyone who has supported us." Ms. Cooper and Mr. Day scanned and sent a petition with more than 1,000 of their customers' signatures to the council around 10 days ago, which they believe was the catalyst for the sudden change of heart.
Renowned author performs at book festival. Author and poet Michael Rosen performed to 400 children at Colden Common's first ever Children's Book Fest. In an effort to contribute to Coldon Common's village life and future, local parish church, Holy Trinity, hosted a children's book festival from June the 23rd to June the 26th to encourage kids to enjoy books and take pleasure in writing. The festivities kicked off on Thursday, June the 23rd, with a pop-up bookshop at the local primary school run by Winchester bookseller P.G. Wells. The shop was open throughout the event for parents and children to browse and to buy from. Ahead of his arrival, Michael's books such as We're Going on a Bear Hunt and poetry book On the Move proved very popular. The world-famous author shared his joy in storytelling with the children on the school field before leading a training lecture on teaching poetry and prose. The weekend saw a selection of activities, including outdoor games, a book and jigsaw sale swap, and a fancy dress picnic. A class of 7 and 8 year olds received a special award for their entry, Joseph's 12 Sons. Festival organisers gave thanks to Taylor Wimpey, whose sponsorship of the prizes meant copies of both classics and newer titles could be given out. Planning begins for Coldon Common's next Children's Book Fest in 2024. A spokesman for Holy Trinity said, "We are pleased to make a contribution to the life of our village and look forward to building this into a regular event."
Winchester's census results. The first results of the 2021 census are in, and they show Winchester has seen its population swell over the last decade. The census takes place every 10 years, with every household in the UK required to take part. The latest snapshot of England and Wales was captured on March the 21st, 2021. Now the first results have been released, and there's been a rise in the number of people living in Winchester. On census day, 127,500 people were living in the area. That's up 9%. From 116 and a bit percent thousand in 2011, when the last census was carried out. This also means the population density has grown to 193 usual residents per square kilometre, up from 176 in 2011. The census is crucial for the UK statisticians to understand how our population is changing, and plays a vital role in how our public services and government operate. It shows the balance of men and women in the area has changed. Winchester's population is now 48.7% male and 51.3% female, meaning there is now a slightly higher proportion of men in the area than 10 years ago. In 2011, people living in Winchester were 48.6% male and 51.4% female.
Feedback wanted for work on play area. Winchester City Council is hosting consultation sessions at the park to hear what playground users want. Last year, the City Council approved improvements to 9 Winchester playgrounds and routine maintenance of a further 15. The Abbey Gardens playground is one of the best used in the city and is due to be refurbished after the summer. Some £230,000 has been budgeted for its improvement, more than double the cost originally proposed in the town forum in June 2021. Winchester City Councillor for St Michael Ward, Charles Radcliffe, led the call for feedback on Facebook, where playground users have been commenting their suggestions. Councillor Radcliffe said, "We're hoping to hear from playground users, their parents and carers, to find out what they'd like to see in the new playground. What's missing at the moment? What have they seen somewhere else that they think might work in Abbey Gardens? It's their park, their playground, and we want to make sure we're creating a facility that everyone can enjoy and benefit from. There are all sorts of studies that can tell us what's worked elsewhere. But in the end, it's vital to listen to people locally to know what they'd like to see on the site. I'm sure we all have thoughts on this. Personally, I'd love to see more done to make the park accessible for children with disabilities and special needs. More sensory play, perhaps some water play and a chill-out space. But everyone will bring their own ideas, and that's why it's so important we run these kinds of consultations. So far, we've had lots of initial interest. Quite a few mums and dads saying, it's about time. I know the council staff who've been in the park have received lots of positive responses already, and there's been interest online and on social media as well. The current consensus is that the playground is in need of a slide. Winchester parent Isabel Gershinger, speaking at the park, said, we're definitely missing a slide, but the kids love the train. I like how the park feels safe for toddlers. As a parent, a paddling pool would be a no. The Winchester City Council Natural Environment and Recreation team is accepting feedback until July the 17th. People answering the online questionnaire are encouraged to ask their children what they think too.
Olympiad success for Peter Simmons College student scientists. A group of Winchester biology students were placed in the top 100 in the British Science Olympiads after competing out of 2,100 entrants nationally. Peter Simmons College students excelled in the recent British Science Olympiads, with 15 students winning medals or being commended. One student made it to the National Biology Olympiad selection team, and 5 students won medals, with one of the group placing in the top 100 nationally out of a total 2,100. Upper 6th student Nathaniel Joyce qualified for the second round of the competition, putting him in the top 16 students from the whole UK, drawn from a field of over 8,000 entrants.
Defibrillators to be installed at county tips. Defibrillators will soon be installed at every household waste recycling centre in Hampshire, the County Council has confirmed. On May the 23rd, Martin Lucas, a 60-year-old truck driver, suffered a heart attack whilst at the Marchwood tip. He was taken to University Hospital, Southampton, for treatment, but did not recover. Now, Hampshire County Council says it is fast-tracking the installation of defibrillators at all household waste recycling centres in a bid to ensure this never happens again. Councillor Edward Heron, Executive Lead Member for Environment and Transport Strategy, said, we have been working towards having defibrillators installed at our household waste recycling centres for a couple of months now. I'm pleased to say that our waste contractor, Veolia, has secured 26 units from St John Ambulance and expect to receive those by the end of June, with a view to them being installed on sites as quickly as is reasonably practicable. The defibrillators are being installed at the 24 household waste recycling centres in Hampshire and also those in Portsmouth and Southampton. Martin, who was a member of Ashlett Sailing Club, was disposing of garden waste when the heart attack struck. Staff and members of the public rushed to his aid whilst paramedics were called to the scene. Hampshire's tips are run by Veolia on behalf of the County Council. The company does not yet have a date for the installations, but insists they are imminent.
Winchester hosts School Games Festival of Activity. A sporting festival where it really was the taking part that counted. On Friday, June the 23rd, Hampshire Schools took over Winchester Sport and Leisure Park for the Hampshire School Games Commonwealth Sport and Physical Activity Festival 2022. That's a bit of a mouthful. The rain didn't stop everyone smiling, with over 100 schools across 13 Hampshire districts attending the Inclusivity Positive Festival. Previously, the event had been held in Aldershot with a strong sense of competition. But after last year's virtual event, event organisers Energise Me took a new approach. Sharon Robertson, event organiser and Energise Me's lead for children and young people, said, "This is the first year we've done it like this. Previously, it used to be a competition. So they would all come and compete, and I've been doing that for 20 years. This is my 21st Games. It's changed to focus on our less active children. So rather than winning a competition to come here, they've been selected to come as schools that don't usually engage in activity, or pupils in the school who don't usually go to activities. Nearly 30 different activities were on offer at the Bar End facility in hope of embracing sports outside the PE curriculum." Anna Cooper, a teacher from All Saints School in Winchester, said, "It's been really incredible that they really enjoyed the welcoming ceremony. Seeing so many schools taking part and being part of something big has been lovely, especially when we've had COVID for 2 years and not been able to do so much. The kids have really been so excited about it all. Every time I've seen them at school, they've talked about it. I think it's vital to open up these opportunities because they're trying things that they may never have tried before. And this might spark an interest. And they might now want to join a club. They might not have been into a leisure centre before. So it's giving them a chance to experience new things and hopefully help them become fitter and healthier and realise they can do those things."
Hmm. Alsford Patisserie set to close. A patisserie chain has announced that it will be closing its Alsford branch due to the cost of living crisis. Heidi's Patisserie is closing 6 of its branches and relocating its main bakery. The business, which was founded in 1969, is based on Hayling Island but will move to Emsworth. It will also close its branches in Mengham, Westtown, Havant, Drayton and Cowplain. Owner Heidi Elliott told the News Portsmouth that the business was no longer financially viable due to the current economic climate. She said, "Running Heidi's for the past 30 years has been a privilege, a challenge, and an amazing way to have been part of the local community. I personally feel overwhelmed by the loyalty we've received from our employees and customers and would like to thank them all for their support. The reason we are downsizing and relocating is just because it's not financially viable for us to continue. The business is carrying out a consultation with its staff. The Alsford store will close at the end of September, when the lease on the shop building expires."
A hot piece of public art. A piece of public art in the grounds of Winchester Cathedral has been fenced off as it's become a danger in the sunshine. The metal surface Luminous Motion, a reactive light sculpture installed in 2002, has been heating up in the warm weather, leaving civic chiefs fearing for public safety. Winchester City Council fenced the artwork off last year to stop people getting burnt, and it's taken similar measure as the mercury has risen over the past few weeks. A spokesperson said, "For the safety of our residents and visitors, we have taken precautionary measures to cordon off the sculpture during extremely hot weather conditions, as the surface can get hot to touch. It's unclear whether anyone has actually been hurt by the sculpture during its 20 years in the city. The work of artist Peter Freeman, it was erected as part of the Winchester Light Art Project. And there's a picture here of these red plastic barriers put round the sculpture with a sign saying, "Warning, hot surface."
Orchestra celebrates its 50th anniversary. A youth orchestra marked its golden anniversary with two special performances. Hampshire County Youth Orchestra celebrated its 50th anniversary alongside the Wessex Dance Company with 2 days of concerts on Saturday, July the 2nd and Sunday, July the 3rd. The long-awaited celebration took place in one of the top concert halls in the country, the Anvil in Basingstoke. Director of the Hampshire County Youth Orchestra, Carl Clausen, said, "The 50th anniversary celebration recognises what an important part of children's education music is. When the old members came back, they share how it was such a major part of their growing up, not just as a musician, but as a person in general. It plays a huge part in your development as a young person. We're celebrating a real comeback because everything stopped for 2 years. Music was down the pan. So it's also a celebration of the resurrection of music in Hampshire."
Strike warning. Firefighters have branded a 2% pay offer as an insult and warned they could go on strike. Between 2009 and 2021, firefighters' real pay has been cut by 12%, or nearly £4,000, the Fire Brigades Union said. Hampshire firefighters have responded angrily to the pay offer. The FBU executive is recommending its members reject the offer. David Hunt, Brigade Chair for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight Fire Brigades Union, said, "Firefighters have faced pay restraint for 12 years since the economic crisis, with pay caps and below inflation pay awards year on year since 2009. Today's 2% offer, with a backdrop of 9.6% inflation and a cost of living crisis, is an insult to firefighters who stepped above and beyond during the global pandemic. They have sacrificed enough and deserve far better." He said the offer is nothing short of an insult. FUB General Secretary Matt Rack added, "It's galling to be insulted in this way, especially after our contribution to public safety during the pandemic. Firefighters will now inevitably begin to discuss reactions, including industrial action. The Fire Brigades Union and our members do not consider or take industrial action lightly or without ensuring that all efforts to resolve the issue have been exhausted. We will now consider all options, including strike action."
Former news agents to be converted. Whatever that might be. Anyway, we'll read the article and see what it actually means. Changes to a former news agents in Winchester have been permitted by the City Council. The application was to change the use from a mixed-use building to all residential, C3 at 34 Hyde Street, and also for a rear extension and internal alterations, as well as an enclosure and gate along the south boundary. The property was vacated by its previous tenant at the beginning of November last year, with the works being carried out, but keeping the original shop frontage. The planning application was submitted to the City Council by the director of 34 Hyde Street Limited, Guy Macklin. Mr. Macklin previously said that it was important to the company to keep the shop frontage, as it has a long-standing legacy in the area, with a shop first opening at the property in 1894. It was then acquired by Edith Best in 1925 and was managed by her son Leonard and then by his son Eric. The shop, which is set at 34 Hyde Street, was closed during the war, and when it reopened, it became a newsagent's. Despite the plan being permitted, there were objections submitted to the City Council. An objection from the City of Winchester Trust said, "The Trust has no issue with the change of use. However, this is a listed Grade 2 building and in a conservation area. It was felt that with these designations, the proposed amendment for rear, ground and first floor extensions should use traditional forms and materials that are in keeping with the character of the building. We therefore object to the application." Christopher Cutler of Hyde Church Lane said, "I would like to formally object to the proposed plans for 34 Hyde Street on the grounds of it not being in keeping with the conservation area. I am also concerned with the affected light levels in my neighbours' houses." Mr. Macklin explained that a new business had been sought to take on the property, however none were suitable. He said, "We had inquiries from many sectors, including dentists, doctors, architects and publishing. The commercial space didn't work for these applicants, and after discussion with the LPA, the most logical route forward was conversion back to a single house."
Military Wives Choir set to appear at Cathedral. A famous choir who once topped the charts with their heart-rending Christmas song have spoken of their delight ahead of a special performance at Winchester Cathedral. The Military Wives Choirs, who rose to stardom after their song "Wherever You Are" was named Christmas No. 1 in 2011, are celebrating their 10th anniversary with 5 concerts. One of these productions will be performed at and live-streamed from the nave of Winchester Cathedral, hosting 160 members from 13 Military Wives Choirs. A member of the choir since May 2012, Angeline Bowser, 45, said, "We are so excited and honoured to perform at Winchester Cathedral for this once-in-a-lifetime event. It's also lovely to catch up with everyone again, as I haven't seen some of the women in a long time." On Friday, July the 22nd, the choirs will be joined by soprano Laura Wright at 7:30 p.m. at the Cathedral. Laura, who has collaborated with the Military Wives Choir since 2018, said, "I'm thoroughly delighted to be singing alongside this amazing group of women once more." The concert series will comprise of performances at 5 cathedrals across England and Scotland. Concerts will also feature the talents of conductor and artistic director Hilary Davin-Wetton and an ensemble of musicians, including Ambassador Sean Hargreaves and arranger Lucy Mulgan. The Military Wives Choirs is a community of almost 2,000 members in over 70 choirs across the UK and worldwide. All the women involved have lives that are impacted by their connection to the armed forces, who, through the choirs, are able to share friendship and uplifting experiences. This anniversary marks a decade of the registered charity supporting and empowering military women through music. Angeline said, "The choir has been an absolute lifeline for me. I walked into my first rehearsal in Warminster with no friends, and I left that evening with 30. I felt like I'd come home." When Angeline's husband, who had served in the military for 23 years, died in 2017, the choir was central in getting her back on her feet. She said, "I was in a place of absolute despair, but these amazing, amazing ladies really helped me with the healing process. They were absolutely fantastic. I received so much love and so much support."
Vineyard hoping to encourage tourism. A New Hampshire vineyard is hoping to produce 18,000 bottles of wine each year. Woodman Wines in Sparshot has just been established, but its owners say they are keen to encourage community involvement, engagement and ecotourism. Married couple Richard and Chrissy Morse made the decision to convert some of their land into a vineyard just over a year ago. They are now setting up a tasting room alongside the vineyard, as well as connections with the local college and hotel, to provide tourists with another reason to visit Winchester. Having just planted the vines, it won't be until 2028 that the grapes are of sufficient maturity to produce wine. Chrissy said, "Hampshire is becoming an increasingly popular choice for growing vines due to the nutrient-rich soil."
Mm-hmm. Winchester's most wanted high street shops. Shoppers in Winchester have revealed the shops they would most like to see open on the high street. From more than 70 comments on the Hampshire Chronicle's Facebook page, it seems Winchester locals want the same thing. Bargain retailers such as B&M, Savers, Wilko and Home Bargains were common suggestions. But Woolworths took the top spot, with 10 people making the same suggestion so far. Woolworths left Winchester High Street in January 1989, before the chain went into administration in 2008. But it seems people are missing their bargain buys and the much-loved Winchester pick and mix. Giles Broomfield from Facebook said, "Something that doesn't sell mobile phones or coffee or is bank or building society, that's most of Winchester High Street, could do with a B&M, a Home Bargains and a Wilko's would be good. Meanwhile, others seem to be more nostalgic and keener to bring back the more traditional high street of independent businesses like a butcher, fishmonger and a greengrocer's. General high street stores like the ones we used to have."
Oh, yeah.
First cohort of Peter Simmons meet for reunion. More than 70 former students of Peter Simmons Sixth Form College took a trip down memory lane as they met 46 years after they left at a reunion. The first cohort of the newly formed Peter Simmons Sixth Form College gathered on June the 25th for a reunion at the University of Winchester. They left in 1976 after girls had first been admitted in 1974. Alison Preston said, "The reunion included attendees from New Zealand, Singapore, Morocco, Korea, Ireland, France and the UK. Five former staff members from this era were also able to attend and meet their former students. About 225 former students from the year group were found during the past couple of years of lockdowns, using a combination of personal memory, internet searching, and the formation of active social media group."
Frustration over bus pass changes. Winchester residents have spoken about their concern on proposed changes to bus passes and concessionary travel. Hampshire County Council is holding a consultation on the plans, which could see people forced to pay fees, operational charges, and cuts to back office functions. The authority said the proposals are being made in the light of continued significant pressures on local authority budgets. For many people, bus passes provide a vital link between the city centre and surrounding areas. Winchester residents spoke of their frustration of the news. Caroline McLaughlin, 70, said, "I'm very upset. These bus passes are a lifeline for a lot of people. I go to all sorts of places with it." Judith Stubbs, 83, said, "I'll be devastated. It's one of the few pleasures I get. People like myself come here just for a break and won't be able to soon. If people start using their cars again, that's a lot more pollution." Councillor Edward Heron, executive and lead member for transport, said, I'd like to reassure service users especially that no decisions have been made. We will endeavour to minimise the impact on passengers from any changes that may be agreed at a later date. However, it is essential that we find ways to do things differently and with reduced costs. The Council said it would continue to meet its statutory duties and to work in partnership with bus operators to secure a network of bus services for residents across Hampshire within the resources available. However, people are being urged to take part in a survey before it's too late. A spokesman said, "Please can we bring to your attention again this ongoing consultation to remind people that there's still time for them to have their say on the proposed changes probably, if they haven't done so already and would like to. The consultation closes at midnight on Sunday, July the 24th.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.